Welcome to the Self-Esteem and Confidence Mindset with me, Johnny Pardo. Welcome back to the Self-Esteem and Confidence Mindset podcast with me, Johnny Pardo. Today, I have a special guest on the episode with me. So welcome, Abby. Hey, Abby.
Hi.
It's great to have you on today, Abby. So we'll go a little bit into Abby's story and her background. But first, I'll just give a quick introduction to Abby. So Abby is a licensed clinical psychologist. She utilizes evidence-based practices, including cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and acceptance-based treatments for both individuals and couples with relationship problems, anxiety, trauma, depression, and mood disorders. She's also the author of 3 books. So impressive stuff, Abby. And I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. So given what I've just said, tell us a little bit more about what you do and what got you into this area.
Yeah. I'm excited to be here. I got into psychology, I guess, through my own existential crisis and wondering, you know, why are we here and what is this life about and what makes people happy and why do we do what we do? And I took some psychology classes and I loved them. And I integrate from acceptance and commitment therapy, schema therapy, existential therapy. So I utilize evidence-based treatments to work with both individuals and couples and also with groups.
Ah, brilliant. Okay. Yeah. And I remember studying psychology as well when I went through uni and did it, but it's always interesting to see why people did what they did. And I know there's a whole range of teachers out there. So it sounds like you got interested like myself as well. And it's really useful to kind of see how it applies to real life. So that's fantastic. You got into that area. So what do you find some of kind of the main challenges in the work you do with the individuals you work? What are some of the most common problems?
The common issues that people come into me. Well, I work with schemas, with core beliefs. And so I have a schema questionnaire on my website. The most common schema that I see, the core belief that shows up the most, is perfectionism. So many people are having this unrelenting standards schema and put really high expectations on themselves and on others. Other issues that people come in with is usually around relationship, attachment styles, things like, you know, during this pandemic, it's been a lot of getting motivated and feeling disconnected. I think that the last couple of years, you know, new issues are kind of arising around feeling more disconnected and isolated. So these kinds of issues are coming up.
Yeah. Okay. No. Those definitely sounds like some relatable topics for many of the audience and definitely people I've worked with and even in myself, of course, go through some of these. So perfectionism, I guess obviously the world we live in as well, that's always being pushed on us from various things such as social media as well, being a huge challenge for us. So would you say overthinking is something a lot of people come in with as well, like overthinking things?
Oh, absolutely. I do acceptance and commitment therapy, meaning that right now, a lot of the treatments are moving more towards like away from second wave behavioral therapy and more towards third wave behavioral therapy. And what that means is we're doing less of these kinds of challenging people's thoughts or restructuring thoughts, finding evidence for and evidence against the thought. We're using more acceptance-based strategies. And what that means is we're changing our relationship to the mind in general, not getting into every content, every thought that our mind pops up, but more about how do we change the relationship, like to our minds, because all human beings, you know, our minds are kind of like a popcorn machine, and it's evolutionarily designed to constantly be seeking out threat and danger and catastrophizing. And so it's actually better for us to have the kind of relationship with our mind where we don't buy into too many products that our mind tries to sell us, whether they're positive or negative, so that we could have some distance from it, so that our mind has less influence on our behaviors, whether positive or negative.
Mm. Okay. No, that's interesting. And kind of, so you're saying kind of just, is there a little bit of observing in there? You're kind of suggesting observing what's going on rather than getting too caught on the train of emotion.
Right. We practice certain techniques like doing mindfulness or doing diffusion, where we notice the products that our mind tries to sell us, or we notice the way a thought gets in the way of a certain behavior. Like if I feel guilty or I'm having a thought that I'm selfish, that thought and that feeling may act as a barrier to me being assertive, right? And so our thoughts and our feelings could get in the way of certain actions. And as a behavioral therapist, we're always thinking about changing behaviors first, not trying to change. Changing thoughts and feelings takes a very long time. Mm. But actually changing a behavior could happen right this instance. And the more behaviors we do that are in alignment with the kind of person that we want to be, with our values, the more that we feel better about ourselves in the long run.
Yeah. And I guess the when we sort of change our behaviors or our actions, that can influence our thoughts and feelings. But yeah, that obviously thoughts and feelings, that's definitely not an overnight fix, as I'm sure many people are aware. And sometimes I've certainly feel like, you know, when I've spoken to someone, it's I'm still not feeling confident. It's like a couple of days. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
You got to check. It's consistent action. It's consistently working on, you know, some of those thoughts and things like that. I mean, I do like quite a lot of Tony Robbins stuff, and he's always on about changing some of these behaviors, the way you move your body.
Right.
Like, well, you're jumping up like a crazy man, like every hour or whatever. But that changes the feelings.
Right. I think many people, they come into therapy and they want you to make them feel better. Like, if only I was more confident, I would go out on that date. Or if I was, you know, if my self-esteem was higher, I would go for that job interview. Or if I just felt calmer, then I would do the things that, you know, are important. But actually what I help clients do is notice that we don't have to do emotionally driven behaviors. There's like a space between a thought and a feeling and an urge. And then there's a space where we have the freedom to choose our behavior and to choose a behavior that's guided by our values and what we want to be about. And then that is how we start feeling better. That's how we feel more fulfilled and a sense of purpose and a sense of, you know, passion in our life.
Hmm. Awesome. Love it. And what, obviously you've got, you know, a couple of the CBT you mentioned, and acceptance and commitment therapy. Obviously we've kind of been touching on elements within them in our conversation, but for anyone who's not familiar with those terms or those therapies, what would be a simple way of describing them?
Sure. So I integrate schema therapy and acceptance and commitment therapy. Mm. So I work with core beliefs. So if you go on my website and you take the schema questionnaire, first we notice what are the core beliefs that you bring into your relationships and into your life. Mm. And then we think about what are the behaviors you do when you get triggered. So every belief that we have, when we get triggered, it brings up all of these automatic experiences, thoughts, feelings, sensations, and urges. The dilemma, let's imagine that you have a defectiveness shame schema. So I have 11 schemas, like defectiveness, this belief that something's really wrong with you, you're fundamentally broken. And if anybody got to really know you, they wouldn't be able to accept you or love you. Then we have like a mistrust abuse schema, where the belief is that others will betray you or lie to you or use you. we have the perfectionism schema, putting really high standards on yourself and others, self-sacrifice schema, you know, the belief that others' needs are more important than your own. The opposite of that one is an entitlement schema, the belief that your needs are more important than others. We have a subjugation schema, feeling that if you make your needs a priority, you may get punished or retaliated against. So, or an emotional deprivation schema, this experience that this belief that your own needs will not get met in relationships. And so we bring these core beliefs into all of our relationships, whether at work or with our boss or with our romantic partner or with our friends. It's like we're the common denominator. And we've learned certain behaviors that then when we continue to do them in our adult lives, like the behaviors we learned as kids, they create a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if I have an emotional deprivation schema, I believe that my needs are not going to get met in this relationship. I may just suppress all my needs, and then it confirms that my needs don't get met. Or I start suppressing all of my needs, and then I'm like a balloon. I get close to bursting with all of these needs that are not getting met. And suddenly I evacuate all of my needs, and you don't meet this need, and you haven't listened to me, and you're not affectionate with me, and you're not emotionally available with me. And suddenly the person has not heard any needs, and they're hearing so many, and they're not able to meet your needs because there's so many of them. And so that also creates this self-fulfilling prophecy where your needs don't get met. So I help people see how their behaviors are influenced by these core beliefs. Mm. I help them identify the thoughts, feelings, sensations, and urges that come up with these beliefs. And I do experiential exercises to get them to experience what it's like to be free from what the mind tells you to do and what your urges tells you to do, and move towards values and what matters. And often when we can choose values, we stop the repetition compulsion, and then we feel radically different in our relationships. We provide an opportunity for a new dynamic to occur.
Yeah. Yeah. I when you're talking about beliefs, I'm so glad you brought up beliefs, because often sometimes I certainly discovered in my own journey that there's often quite a lot of beliefs as well we're not even aware of, that have been stored away, you know, usually from childhood experiences, even if it wasn't like hugely traumatic, like, you know, you might have been gone up with a good upbringing, but like a moment which has stored away a belief. And then our behaviors often tend to reflect that. So I like what you were saying in terms of looking at, you know, the way they can behave now and also towards these values and actually looking what's important to them right now. So, yeah. I'm really glad you brought up beliefs, because I think it's quite important to actually become self-aware. And is that something you do as well, and try and get, you know, the individuals you're working with more aware of their beliefs?
Absolutely. The way that I describe our beliefs when I'm working with clients is they're kind of like a pair of sunglasses that we've developed that is shaping how we're viewing everything. And we don't know that we're wearing these glasses. And so what I help them do is I help them notice the glasses and what shade they are, what color they are, how they're influencing how they're seeing things and perceiving. And we start looking more at the actual glasses than from the glasses. Because when we're doing behaviors coming from this lens, we're always creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. We are pulling from other people the same behaviors that confirm our fears. But when we could notice, right, like, for example, if I have a defectiveness shame schema and my glasses are here, I believe that the more I share about myself, the more you will reject me. This may stop me from being vulnerable or being assertive, right, or sharing myself. But then if I keep doing that, I don't share myself, it continues to confirm the belief that nobody really loves me because I don't actually share myself. Now, if I'm able to look at the glasses rather than from, suddenly I have all of this behavioral flexibility. I'm triggered. I have an experience filled with sensations and thoughts and right, urges. Like, I just want to lie or, you know, or say yes when I mean a no, right? Or hide my needs or not negotiate or not ask for a raise, whatever the urge is. And the dilemma is that now when we can look at the glasses, now we have this freedom to build some self-compassion for our experience, build a distance from the mind so that then we could really choose, like see all of the options that are available to us about how we want to move forward. And then it really changes our life. We're no longer living in this repetition where we do the same old behaviors and get the same old outcomes over and over again. We go, see, I knew that you were not trustworthy, or I knew you would reject me.
Yeah. It's like this, I can totally relate from my own experience and then other examples and, you know, friends and family members and various things like that. When you get into that cycle of like believing something and therefore your actions or behaviors, therefore consistent with that, and it comes back and reinforces the belief again. And then you keep looking at it that way rather than actually stepping aside. I really love what you said there about using glasses. Well, it's a really good analogy, is that a term? Just looking, you know, through glasses, never heard it that way. And that's kind of the way you're seeing the world. So the examples I was like thinking of, it's like that person, you know, whether it's that girl who always chooses the wrong guy for the relationship. And then she thinks, oh, all the guys are bad, but yet she keeps going out and finding the bad guy deliberately, even though the warning signs. Or, you know, the guy who wants to lose some weight and he's like, oh, I can't lose any weight, and it's like, and then he goes and tries a little bit, but then just goes and eat, you know, some more sugary donuts or whatever, and then goes back and goes, see, can't do that, because he's got right. That belief that he's not worthy of losing the weight. There's probably a deeper rooted belief than that, but than just like, I can't lose weight. Obviously, it's probably, there's something right. deeper there. And as with the previous example as well. But yeah, no, I did like how you described it in terms of a pair of sunglasses or something. That's really a good one. So when you're helping people obviously go through this process and using your systems, your processes and the tools, do you find it important to get a good mixture of reflecting perhaps on the past a little bit and getting them understanding, but also moving forward at the same time? Because I know obviously sometimes we look back and then we're just like too reflected of like, okay, that happened because of this. This is why I'm feeling like that, which is useful. But then there's also sometimes we move forward. So do you find a mixture of the two works best?
My preference is to be in the present moment as much as possible. So part of identifying schemas is we're acknowledging that there's a core belief and that it came from somewhere valid. So for example, if I have an emotional deprivation schema, often when we develop core beliefs, they don't occur in a vacuum. It is adaptive for us to develop. Like if my parents are not trustworthy or not consistent, don't feed me on time, don't pick me up from school, I develop a mistrust schema and I now engage in excessive autonomy, that behavior is adaptive in that environment, right? If I believe, for example, if my mother's very unavailable, I'm not getting my emotional needs met or my need for attention met. And then I realize that when I become really hysterical, you know, and kind of losing it completely, she becomes more available. I now stumble on a strategy that is now able to get my needs met within that environment. So it's really important to talk about how schemas are developed and that it's valid that why you developed this belief and how you developed the coping behaviors that you've learned to cope with this belief. But really, more than that, we don't want to swim in the past. We don't want to ruminate and perseverate and keep reliving this pain. We have to get to a place where we, so I always let clients know, with this core belief, what's going to happen is it's going to get triggered in our relationship, and it's going to get triggered in all of your relationships. And it's the work that we're going to do is noticing that, noticing when it's triggered between us. and noticing when it's triggered in important relationships in your life, and clarifying your values. What are the behaviors that you would like to do to replace the coping avoidant behaviors? Maybe you want to be assertive or honest, vulnerable. So the goal is always to move forward in recognizing triggers and recognizing when you're doing behaviors that function to avoid the pain of the core belief rather than to move towards what matters. So present moment is number one, working on the future is number two, and then going into the past is only important as a means to an end to make the future different.
Yeah. And the phrase I like is the past doesn't equal the future unless you live there.
Right. We don't want to live there. No. Yeah. I think it's a big mistake that many therapists make is just staying too much in the past and not having that good balance of knowing how do we bring this past event into the present moment? How does this play out in your life right now? How does this play out between me and you, or in your career life, or in your relationships?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it, because you've got that self-awareness piece of what, you know, why you're thinking or behaving certain ways. And we don't often think about it. We just go through our busy lives and we're behaving these ways. So it's really, really valuable what you're doing and you know, your company's doing in terms of helping people but increase that self-awareness and, you know, even showing them what shades they're wearing or whatever. In terms of all the kind of the schemas they've developed and why is that. But then also making sure they're the present, but and then kind of planning what kind of person they'd like to be. So I guess there's quite a bit of work on identity you do. How do you identify yourself, and what would a powerful identity look like? Would that be accurate to say?
It's accurate in the sense that I'm helping people identify their values. Like, what do you want to be about when you're angry? What do you want to be about when you feel ashamed? What do you want to be about when you feel guilty? And we talk about values like being honest, being assertive, being kind, being collaborative. It's a little bit different from identity, because identity is very fixed. Like, if I was honest yesterday, then I'm honest Abby. Values are a continuous process. So if I was honest yesterday, I still have to be honest right in this moment to continue being honest Abby. And so values are a process, and it's like an identity is kind of like a destination, and values are the journey. I'm never 100% honest Abby, 100%, you know, collaborative, assertive, right? It's every moment is a choice to either move closer towards the kind of person I want to be, or to move further away from the kind of person I want to be. And often when we do an automatic behavior that is for the purpose of getting rid of pain, like not feeling guilty or not feeling ashamed, or not having certain thoughts, those behaviors usually move us further away from values, the kind of person we want to be. I feel really passionately about values. I'm like a values dork, because what I love about values is that they are 100% in our control at all times. So if I have the value of being of service to others or helping others, then I want to become a therapist. For some reason, I'm not able to become a therapist, I could still move towards the value of helping people. So the value, there isn't just one way to move towards a value, and our values, regardless of what we're feeling or what we're thinking, they're always the way we want to be in any moment is always 100% in our, like, a goal may or may not be in our control, but our values are always in our control. And behind every goal, if you could clarify the value, you're more likely to reach your goals, the clearer you are about what is behind that goal.
That for me was a bit of a, a heart moment. And I think that was a really useful perspective of what you say. What I kind of thought was, like, we're so, like, a society in general, whether, you know, you're in the US like yourself or the UK, I think we're both in countries where it's very goal orientated in either a corporation or a very common sort of entrepreneurial world as it's ever growing. It's all kind of either setting, it's very, very goal orientated. But what you're saying is actually look at, you know, you can have goals, but actually look at the values behind those, and that'll give you, you know, a reason why you're going for it. Because sometimes it might just be a goal, I guess, that you might have found that as well from people you've worked with or your own life. I've certainly found that you just set a goal because it's just something you've heard, or, you know, you think that's the idea of what you should be doing.
What you should.
Rather than actually it being value driven. So that for me was a bit of a very good question to start asking, what are the values behind setting this goal? Why am I setting the goal? So it goes a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess I don't want to say analytical because I don't want to get too analytical in the brain, but, you know.
Well, it's like a free choice, you know.
Yeah,
like what you were saying, it's not based on rules or what we should be. It's more of a free choice of what we truly want to be about. And I'm really glad that you mentioned this kind of rules-based behaviors, because in acceptance and commitment therapy, there's a lot of experiential exercises and metaphors to help people identify their values. And also an important piece of that is helping people distinguish between whether it's a freely chosen value or a rule, right? Because when we're following a rule, again, it's avoidance. I'm doing this. This is my value because I want to be liked, or I want to be accepted, or I care about what others think of me. It's not a real free choice. So we have a lot of fun exercises to distinguish between whether this is a free choice or you're following a rule, which is more about avoidance.
Avoidance one. Yeah. And I guess there's different ways to hit your values as well. Sometimes do you ever look at kind of the way people meet values? So for example, I remember just some work kind of when I was looking up on values a while back, but it's when you're hitting like a value like love or something, sometimes you've got to be liked by everyone, and that's a ridiculous rule because that's impossible. But then you might have a rule for, or kind of not a rule, but a guideline for hitting love, because by all you've got to do is just like be kind to someone or smile at someone. So do you ever find people want these good values, but they make it really hard for themselves?
I love that what you're doing is, you know, when I do like a lecture on values, I go, values are not a rule, they're a choice. Values are not a feeling, they're a behavior. And you're kind of hitting all of these points of what values are and what they aren't. So if you're saying that your value is love, that's a feeling, right? Mm. But you could be loving. So a value of being loving, being kind, being compassionate, you know, values are like a compass. So the goal of values is that they are guiding your behavioral choices. So I always tell people, if you can't put the word being in front of it, it's not a value. So if you say, for example, my value is to be calm. Then I go, no, being calm is a feeling. But if you felt calm, what would you be doing differently? What does being anxious stop you from doing? And that's where the value is. So the point of values is that values, when I work with clients to identify values, we're always identifying a set of values, right? And then we choose certain behaviors that are consistent with a set of values. And that's where it gets kind of hard. Because if I have a value of being kind, compassionate, assertive, honest, authentic, and you say to me, hey, Abby, how do you like my shirt? And I go, that shirt, you know, looks like crap. You look terrible. Maybe it was honest in the moment, but it's certainly not compassionate or kind, right? If I go, oh, that shirt is beautiful. It's my favorite shirt I've ever seen you wear. Now I'm not being authentic or honest, but I'm being kind and compassionate. But I could find something in the middle where I go, you know, this shirt is not my favorite, but when you wear this red shirt, you know, that really suits you. And I love this red shirt on you. Now I've moved towards all of these values. And so we're always identifying a set of values. Values are not feelings. They're not beliefs. They're not rules. And they're not goals. they are a compass and like a way to tell you whether you're going in the right or wrong direction. And then we always identify specific behaviors that are in alignment with a set of values, which gets difficult because it's very easy to move towards one value. But then when you're incorporating several different values, you have to get pretty creative. Values are also not dependent on other people and the outcome of it. So if I move towards being honest, maybe you feel hurt, disappointed, angry, right? And being honest doesn't always come without a cost. So values are not dependent on the outcome of the behaviors. They are solely driven by your own free choice. And if you've decided that this behavior is in alignment with these particular values, you know that you are acting consistently with your values. And the rest of the information that you get from the world is no longer information about you. It's information about them and your relationships, not about you and your values.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how you separated the two there, that your values and kind of the rest of the world side of things there. So, but kind of linked to that a little bit, I wanted to touch on the power of community. And this is something I always touch on with guests, because the people we surround ourselves with, you know, whether that, hopefully that's more conscious when people are sort of like listening to this and, you know, working with you or other people, is they become quite conscious on the people they're like hanging around. Do you kind of look at the power of community in your work and how people are kind of, who they're hanging around and perhaps that impacts on certain behaviors they're doing and various things around their life?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I certainly think that community is very important. And if there's anything that we've learned from this global pandemic is how interconnected we are and how interdependent we are. And when one person does a behavior in another side of the world, you know, with a bat, it could impact all of us. And so I think that we are, you know, humans need one another. We are interdependent. And I guess that's why a lot of my work is about relationships and relating and what we want to be about in the world with others. I want to be careful because there's a fine line that, others are not the cause of our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. They're a stimulus, but they're not the cause. So if I have a value of being honest and I'm around friends who are not being honest, I still have the same choice to be honest or, you know, to spend less time with them, you know, or to share honestly about certain things and not share other things, but I'm still being honest. So our values are never dependent, like they're not, right, dependent on other people's actions, and other people are not the cause of our actions. So it's a really fine balance. You know, does that make sense? Because we all need community. And also, we don't always have complete control over that community. Like when we're going to the office, there's going to be some people that are kind and fair and collaborative and honest. There's going to be other people that are, you know, not that way. And we still have the same choice to be consistent with the kind of person that we want to be, regardless of who we're relating with. And I think that that's the freedom of really feeling empowered. When we notice that we could have the self-discipline and freedom to do behaviors that are never dependent on a thought, on a feeling, on a sensation, on an urge, on another person, on a rule, they're just driven by what deeply matters to us and this intentionality that we bring to the moment.
I'm glad you touched on, like, you know, at the end of the day, we're it's more powerful the way you've said it there. Empowering is probably a great word for that, you know, it's not other people who determine that you know, that for, it's kind of how we think, and we've got
right
all over that. But yeah, I always kind of like bring that up because you know, it is a challenge if you're hanging around with negative people constantly, which I think that's important, rather than, you know, those uplifting people. But at the end of the day, like you're saying, it's important to recognize your own power to influence your own mind rather than it being down to someone else.
Yeah. And I think the question is always, is what is in my control and what is out of my control? Yeah. If I'm friends with, if I'm friends with someone and their energy is bringing me down, it's in my control to make a request, to assert myself, to be honest, to have a conversation, to make space, to end the relationship, all of these different things. I have all of these choices. If it's my boss and it's a global pandemic and I can't leave my job, then my options are a little bit different, but that doesn't mean that I don't have choice. I still have choice about what I want to be about.
Yeah, I like that. And one great book I read was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and Stephen Covey. And when that circle just, it's a massive book. It's a lot in there. But it's just that circle of, concern and then your circle of influence. That whole model was, really made sense to me. Like, that often we have these feeling, get anxious, these feelings, but it's thinking about those things like the weather or what someone else has said, even though, you can influence people to a degree. So I always like to kind of touch on that a little bit. So some great points there on that one as well.
Yeah. And to really distinguish the difference between having influence and having control.
Yeah.
We could have an influence somewhere, but it doesn't mean that we have control over it. Like I could ask someone to borrow their car. And if I say it nicely, right, I'm more likely to get it and have influence. But if they don't have a car, then it's out of my control, whether I have influence or not. And so often people confuse those two. And they think that influence means they have control. But we the only thing we really have control over 100% is our own actions, right? Our own mouth and arms and legs, like our own behaviors.
Yeah. Well put. And we sometimes don't realize it. And it's the other way around. It's like, I can't control the weather or other people. But it's like, obviously you can influence them, but you can't influence the weather, obviously, but you can influence.
Unless you move somewhere.
Yeah. Good point. You can influence. But well said, obviously, is different from control. And what you've only got control over is yourself. And there's a difference between that and influence. So, I love that. So one of the kind of the final questions is, do you get people to like write down things often? And do you think it's powerful to get it down on paper?
Yes, I have written, yes. I came prepared for this, writing things down. So I think, also ACT is very experiential. So I do a lot of exercises with the paper. Like I'll have people write down, like, what are some negative thoughts and feelings that you have, like on one side of the paper. And then I ask them, what do these thoughts and feelings stop you from doing? And then I have them write it on the opposite side of the paper. And I help them see that your fears and your values are on the opposite side of the same coin. And the more you push away the negative thoughts and feelings, your values are also further away from you. So then when they're willing to move towards the negative, or I don't like negative, but uncomfortable thoughts, feelings, sensations, when you're willing to move towards that, I do experiential exercises with that. Like let's hold this thought lightly, or is this thought really close to your face right now? Is it over here? Is it heavy? Like, how strongly do you believe this thought right now? I mean, that's what I think is very interesting about self-esteem, right? Is that it's not fixed. It's very fluid. We all know the experience of, like, sometimes you wake up and you're just feel really awesome. You're like, you think you're good looking and interesting and funny. And then another day you wake up on the wrong side of the bed and you just feel like kind of crappy about like every decision you've ever made in your life. And so it's interesting to notice that we have different moods, and our moods, we have influence over our mood, right? Like if we get enough sleep and we eat right, but we can't control our mood. It's not like if a lion walked into this room and both of us would be able to not have a fight or flight response. I think a lot of people want to be able to control that and actually, like, our nervous system is there for a reason. It's helpful to us. We don't want to get rid of our nervous system. Sometimes I hear people say, heal the nervous system. Our nervous system is already healed. Our nervous system does exactly what it should. We just need to listen to it and trust it. Because if a lion walks in here, we want to be in fight or flight. We have complete control over our behaviors. We don't want to slap that lion, but we want to be able to know that we're in danger and we're not going to be able to control our hearts racing, right? Our hands shaking. So writing things down is extremely important, because our brain and our memory works in such a way that, you know, when we make things tangible, they're more likely to stick with us. And also when we do an exercise that's not something we just understand on a rational intellectual level, but that we understand on a visceral level, it's more likely to create real behavioral change, like an experiential exercise where you have an aha moment. And it's not in the head, right? It happens like all below the head. It's like a visceral experience of understanding something about how you get stuck, or how your mind is pushing you a certain way, or how your beliefs are impacting you. And so writing things down, playing with things, like drama therapy, touching things, making it tangible, setting reminders for ourselves to go, oh yes, I did think this thought, you know, or yes, I did believe this at like a 90%. All of those things are so important to create behavioral change that's really lasting.
Yeah, oh, brilliant. I love what you said about the exercise. You had them, you know, people write down one side and then the other side and being able to look at that. So glad you're taking notes like me as well. So yeah, we've yes. taken quite a lot of notes of our conversation as well. And yeah, just for me personally, it's always been useful to kind of get, because we're all human, we all need to kind of like get stuff out of our head. So getting it down on paper for me really, really helps. The challenge is when I'm running and I get all the ideas, I'm like typing on my phone at the same time. So that becomes a challenge. Then write it up later.
But, that's when it's good to record yourself, send yourself a voicemail.
Oh yeah, I've got to do that next, I think, but it'll be like out of breath.
Right.
Yeah, interesting. All the best ideas when you're exercising.
Right.
Or in silence. Actually, sitting in silence can really help, I find.
Or in the bathroom. You just have epiphanies, like in the bathroom or the shower.
Yeah. Crazy. It's been a great conversation so far, Abby. But before we sort of, close off and then share a little bit more about your information, are there any kind of final points that perhaps you'd like to share that we haven't covered so far?
Nothing that comes to mind. I mean, I could share a little values exercise to help people assess for themselves whether they're following a rule or moving towards a genuine value. I can't think of any particular new topic, but I certainly can do any. I like to always make sure that I provide enough kind of experiential experiences and also, like verbal rationales, if that makes sense.
Oh, brilliant. No, I think you've given us such great information today. So is the values exercise something you have available for people to check out?
Yes, I do. So people could check out www.cbtonline.com. That's the one where I have a lot of like exercises and videos and webinars and online courses. And also a therapist directory where you could get like a cognitive behavioral therapist. And then I also have another website, which is www.bayareacbtcenter.com. And that is more for my group practice in San Francisco. And so Yeah, there's some online courses, webinars, and also the questionnaires. So I have a schema questionnaire, information about values, exercises for values, and also questionnaires for schemas at work, workplace schemas.
Oh, brilliant. Sounds like some great practical exercises for people to listen, listen to or have a go at. So probably reading mainly. So fantastic range of resources there. So obviously those are some, I'll link those websites in the show notes, in the description. Is that the kind of the main place people can find you on the website, or is there anywhere else people can find you?
Well, if you want to send me an email, you could send me an email at info@bayareacbtcenter.com. Okay, but those cool. are the main two. Yeah, those are the main two places to find me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Awesome. If you want to find some of the books, they're available on Amazon. So you could just look up my name and see the books. Some of them are for therapists and some of them are just for people in general.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. That's a great range of resources available and life-changing stuff you're doing. So thank you so much for everything you're doing for people out there and for sharing such value on the show today. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
Ah, that's awesome, Abby. So that concludes our episode today. And remember, work on your self-confidence every single day.